Well, welcome everybody to another interview with Unbolted Live. I'm MJ Bolt, your host, and with us today we have Rob Leinberger, one of our candidates for the Central Valley School District Position 5. Welcome, Rob.
Thanks, MJ. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. And Rob is also one of the endorsed, the Spokane GOP endorsed candidates for this position. So we're excited to have Rob with us. And thank you for running, Rob. These school director positions are so important for our community and our kids. We really appreciate you stepping up.
Great.
Well, so Rob, let's start off by telling everybody about yourself, your background, and why you are running for this position. What motivated you to run for the school board?
Yeah, so my background, I was born and raised in the Spokane area. Graduated from Riverside High School in 1984. I was a terrible student. I hated school. yeah, anybody that talks about going year round, I mean, that's blasphemy as far as I'm concerned, right? So yeah, I dreaded it starting each day and I couldn't wait for it to end. And honestly, probably my last year in high school, I only even attended with, you know, because I played sports, right? For me, it just wasn't a challenge. I figured, like, I'm not learning anything. And so I strayed probably, away from being the proper, you know, polite, you know, well-behaved student. And then, you know, like most kids that age, you kind of get in trouble. And I know now in hindsight, I was probably a handful for my teachers, and especially my algebra teacher. I remember her, Mrs. Hoagie. If I ever got back with her, I would have to get on bended knee and apologize for what a jerk I was back then. But, you know, so then I needed to straighten myself out. So I joined the military. And at 19 years old, I went into the Navy, did a tour as an aircraft electrician's mate, and got an ROTC scholarship. So I went to Oregon State, where I got a business degree with emphasis in accounting and finance. Went to flight training. I was a helicopter pilot, as an officer after that, and I retired in 2008. And then one day, you know, I'm in a flight suit. The next day, you know, I'm in a business suit and I'm off to Motorola. And that's, of course, my second career, where I started with that. And I was hired in there to run R&D research projects, primarily for their wireless projects that were just getting started back in 2008. So before then, like, your TV, your internet, everything was connected to a wire. And then, it, you know, we started the wireless, process then. And I did that for about 5 years. Then I got involved in quality. In my resume, I guess, or my bio, I kind of talk about being in Six Sigma. Motorola is who started the whole Six Sigma process. You know, Six Sigma is a regimented process that you use primarily in manufacturing. And then also they have a component called Lean Six, which where you try to take all the waste out of processes, right? And I guess I specialized in that. So I was, they actually created a role for me at Motorola with the sales team. So I did a lot of traveling, but I was, the role was, you know, customer quality and services, where I would actually engage directly with big customers like Comcast, AT&T, Verizon, you know, the big carriers, and that was kind of the start of, you know, doing the data analysis, the data models, predictive analytics, you know, data-driven solutions to problems. And man, that whole space has just evolved over these last 10 years with AI and everything else. It's, just amazing the things that we can do now with the computing power that we have. So, you know, I've been involved, on the corporate side. I ran big budgets when I was, you know, in the military, particularly, as a squadron commander when I was in that role. I work for Cisco Systems now, still involved kind of in the same type of role, but I manage a global team. And I guess as far as, you know, from a business perspective, a people management perspective, big on innovation, efficiency, that's my work experience with the role. And in addition to that, I also dabbled in local politics a bit. So I'm a PCO out here in where I live in Liberty Lake, and was the candidate's chair under the former chair of the party, MJ Bolt. That was a fantastic time. What a ride that was for 2 years, right? It was. was a great experience. Highs and lows, but in the end, it was great, I thought. And then I became chair of the party. And why am I mentioning this when, you know, the school board race is a nonpartisan? Well, full disclosure, for one, I want people to know who I am and what I do. And also, like, on my campaign material, you know, there's this symbol that says, you know, Republic Hoop right there, you know, recommended candidate by the Republican Party. I hear from a lot of candidates that that's actually a bad thing. So I'm putting this on all my material to see, is that really true? I want the data on this. So yesterday I hit about 600 doors dropping material. I'm not a big door knocker, interrupt people on a Sunday and stuff, but if they're outside in their yard or, you know, walk on the sidewalk, I'll engage with them. Got some great stories and feedback from people in the, you know, particularly in the 5th District here around, like, the houses around Meadowood Golf Course down there, and then the park that kind of extends out there in the eastern part of Liberty Lake. And I would say I probably talked with 30 people. I was out there for about 6 hours total yesterday, and I only got summarily rejected by one guy. So, you know, I was 29 for 30, I'll say, and people, you know, it wasn't a negative, right? And we had some positive conversations and just some, you know, a couple great conversations. Like I pulled up onto this home. There was this elderly gentleman. I'll say elderly. He's probably in his mid 70s. Beautiful home. And started a conversation. These two ladies are standing with him, and they were friends that had come to visit him. And they all had the same story. They're being taxed out of their property. And, you know, that's, you know, one of the tenets of my campaign is when we talk about efficiency, it's, we have to get our arms around this automated increase in budgets that, you know, these government programs in general, but especially schools, just think that they have an entitlement, like $300 million this year, 10% increase next year. For how long can this go on? And it's all fueled, it seems, by the constant reappraisal and revaluation of our property. And all of us that are homeowners in the countywide are feeling the pain on this. And, you know, so I talked with this guy. His backyard, I think, is the par five on the front side there, the second one, right? So you play Meadowood, you know, that's a nice piece of real estate, right? So, you know, he's like, he told me what his tax bill is now, what it was a few years ago, and he looks at it, and what do we all see on the tax bill, you know? And here's, you know, an example. It's like, you know, here, everybody's familiar with this thing, right? You know, the little pie chart that's on there, you know, 37% of it goes directly to schools. So just started a conversation with him and the other two ladies live in Green Acres, and they basically have the same comment. That's their number one concern. You know, when is enough enough with the taxes? And, you know, so I'm like, well, hey, what if, you know, changing hats from candidate to, you know, chair of the party, what if I started researching, maybe we can do a ballot initiative that says you can opt out of that local tax if you're retired, let's say, kind of like Trump was going to do, you know, with the no tax on Social Security, which he's got us about halfway there on that one, and that's not really his fault. Or if you're a parent, you know, we can't get the cash follows the kids, you know, thing here through the legislature. That would be impossible given the makeup of that. But what if we had, you know, just the county part, that 37%, we could offset some of that expense. So if a parent wants to use an alternative source of education for their kids, even if it's homeschool, hey, maybe they can opt out of that. So I thought it was worth exploring. And then, you know, with talking with those folks, maybe that's an idea we look at. If nothing else, you know, to send the message like, hey, we've got to do things differently. We just can't keep rolling up these levies and then saying we're only going to collect this much money. This is what we promised on the face of the levy. We won't, even if the assessed values go up, we won't take any more unless we need it. They always need it, right? So that was, I probably heard that comment about the property taxes was prevalent. It was probably number one. Another interesting story I had, a young couple with young kids moved up from California, from the Sacramento area, because even today, if their kids aren't fully vaxxed and they don't have, you know, a medical or religious exemption, their kids got kicked out of school. And the story with them was their doctor had given too many exemptions. So he was under audit by the state medical board in California. And so he retired. He's like, it's not worth it. I'm 65. I'm done. And so all the exemptions he gave became void. So now their children were no longer, they did not have that exemption. They didn't want them to get the vaccine. And they're up here. And what they asked me, they're like, will that ever happen up here? I'm like, well, I can't say that it'll never happen. But, locally right now, that's not the policy. And hopefully, with RFK in office, they wipe out the requirements on that entire schedule and also prohibit states from doing it as well. I know that you and I, we're both, our families are impacted by vaccines and vaccine injuries. When is somebody going to say we have enough information now to at least pump the brakes on that? So, my promise is, to parents, I got into this for parents and teachers. That parent-teacher relationship, I think, has been disrupted, I'll say, over these past 5-6 years. As well as the policies that schools have, CB in general, with this whole belonging and equity program, getting away from academic excellence, in my opinion, and the opinion of several teachers who convinced me that I needed to run on their behalf. So, we want to restore that focus on academic excellence, and in order to have that, you have to have that strong parent-teacher relationship. And I think that's regardless of grade level. I remember even in high school, my dad, as terrible of a student as I was, he was engaged with the principal and the vice principal and the athletic director. And, all the parents traveled together to games. And I went to a small school, so the teachers were part of that group. And, I think we need to focus on restoring that. I would say particularly in the younger grades, kindergarten through five, when really their brains just develop at a rapid pace. We need that relationship re-energized.
Yeah. Awesome. So Rob, what is your vision for the Central Valley School District?
Yeah. So my right now, in fact, I put out a campaign pamphlet, about the current vision is around the equity and belonging paradigm. Okay. And my vision in consultation with the parents and the teachers that I'm working with, is we have to have, quality delivery of education and quality learning, and we have to have standards that are measurable, and we have, I put out, both on my campaign material here, here's my platform essentially, and I go over this, and then some other folks also got the paper version of it, which is a bit more detailed. Just to kind of start with, we have to restore teacher autonomy in the classroom. This is what the number one, well, actually that's not true. From elementary and high school, not so much middle school, discipline in the classroom has to be restored. That's their number one issue. And going back, about a year and a half when before the state convention, Sammy Bird was at my house and we had a private teacher town hall. And I know that I talked to you about this, and even he was shocked to hear about, that the discipline problems and the lack of administrative support. And I'm not saying that they're bad principals or assistant principals not supporting the teachers. I think some of it might be either OSPI policy or maybe even state law. Especially let's say in like K-3, K-4, you have a child that disrupts the class, it affects the entire class. You have a kid in a high school class that is disruptive, the teacher deals with it, the other kids kind of laugh and giggle, and then they get on with what they're doing. But in those younger grades, it could take, half hour, maybe even an hour to get that class settled back down after you have a meltdown or some other problem. And unfortunately, we have more and more kids that have emotional problems, and the teachers have a huge challenge. And my vision would be to make sure that the classroom teacher is fully supported. Okay. Another thing I hear is classroom teachers don't feel a sense of fulfillment in their roles. It's almost like they're secondary to the process. They are the process. Who's at the delivery end of the product? The teacher, particularly in the younger grades. Teachers need the autonomy. And I'm a data guy, so I use the bell curve analogy, right? So if you have a bell curve and you have the two tails on the curve, you have 10% on the right, let's say 10% on the left, and 80% in the middle, and you have 80% of that class that kind of moves along as a herd. They kind of go at the same pace, pretty well behaved. You might have the on the right side, the high achievers, on the left side, the lower achievers. And I know you and I aren't so old that we don't remember. I mean, most people remember first, second, third grade, who their teachers' names are, you know, because they're just kind of in your brain. You can still see their face in your mind, right? I remember mine. And that is that really that nurturing phase, right? So the teachers need the autonomy to get off the schedule and the program, which is what they have to adhere to now. They call it compliance in Central Valley. You have to comply with the process. So they actually send people around at a certain school that I'm familiar with to monitor and make sure all the teachers are kind of doing everything at the same time, the same way. They might deny they're doing that. We have proof that they are doing it, right? Teachers need the autonomy to say, okay, I need a little extra time with you know, this student. These students don't need so much supervision. They can read, let them go, right? Turn them loose. But they just need the autonomy to manage their classrooms and not so much, don't be burdened by administrative overhead, I call it, or, you know, the armchair quarterbacks down the hall, maybe, or even over at the district office, even worse, telling them what to do. Let them manage it. I think education was a lot better when the teacher ran the classroom with very little intervention from, you know, whether it's the principal or the district office. I think we also have to put a priority on achieving academic standards, and they need to be measurable. It can't just be best try. We can't adjust the output to meet a standard so that we can graduate kids. If it were up to me, I think, third grade, fifth grade, maybe before they go into junior high, before they go into ninth grade, and then probably a junior in high school, there should be some type of an exam, right? And it should be run by the teachers. It shouldn't be something that the state comes down with or the district. It shouldn't be a fill in the bubble, multiple choice test, you know. But there should be something that says some evaluation, maybe a test is the wrong word. Hey, these kids are ready to move on. And if they're not, and so let's just take it high school. If they're not ready to move on by the time they become seniors in high school, that last year is lost anyway. You know, there's no way they're catching up at that point. Also, it may be better to even evaluate them after the second year, you know, when these students have the opportunity to go into running start. Okay. One thing that District 81 is doing is, you know, they're putting more focus on vocational education, particularly the trades, where those students can get out of, you know, when they graduate, they have an apprenticeship in a marketable skill, a really good paying marketable skill, right? I'd like to see that, you know, in every school, regardless of size. Where, I mean, if you have smaller schools, they need to combine, fine. But I know that, you know, Adam Swinyard in 81, in District 81, I met with him, and he's, that is a huge focus of the bonds that they're going to have. And I know it's a big priority for the trade unions to get that. I interviewed with the Carpenters Union the week before last. We talked about that. They were kind of surprised at how much I was for it, you know. And I'm like, I have, you know, real world examples of this. Like my neighbor next door, he's like, college isn't for me. I'm like, learn how to swing a hammer. And in fact, it happened when they were installing my hot tub, and the electricians were there to run the conduit along the, you know, the patio and stuff. And I'm like, this kid, I mean, he looked really green, right? So I'm like, how old are you? He goes, 17. And he was like working a summer job. And I'm like, what are they paying you? He's like, $35 an hour. I'm like, holy cow. You know, there's some great opportunities out there. And you know what? Maybe if you want to be an intellectual later on in life, go to college when you're 24 or 25. There's nothing that says you have to start when you're 18. There's nothing that says you have to go into debt as much as we're expecting these kids to do now. Go be part of the muscular class, I call it, for 4 or 5 years, earn some money, and then, you know, figure out what you want to do in life. So that would be another vision of mine, is to have more focus on that, on those skilled type of academics, rather than just whatever they're teaching now, you know. And then lastly, I talked about, discipline in the classroom. I think with that, I know on the front page, they talk about getting the phones out of the classroom finally now. Those things have to go. I know you follow podcasts and the news and stuff on this. Those screens are dangerous. We know they're dangerous now. With me, it's we're going back to the COVID shot. It's safe and effective. We knew it wasn't. You know why? Because we have intuition. Okay. AI does not have intuition. right? We knew our feelers were up on these things. But it's like, if they're promoting it this much, it has to be bad. I think it's kind of the same things with the phones. It's like, you know, I literally see kids walking down the street and they can't get it further away than 6 inches from their face. I have one of them living in my house. You know, so I think that, you know, I'll give them credit for finally getting that done. Hopefully they can enforce that. And so, you know, just to kind of put a bow on it, it's give the teachers back the classrooms, get out of their way. If they ask for help, give it to them. Let's cut the administrative overhead and take the savings from that we may, achieve from cutting that. It might be cutting staff that we just don't need anymore. Let's put that back into the classroom and make sure that we support the teachers and the parents and the students.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. We've got a few more questions to get through here. Okay. Why do you believe people should vote for you over your other opponents in the race?
Yeah. So I think they should vote for me because I believe I have the experience, even though I've never been a school board director before. Like on Facebook today, I put up, these are the roles and responsibilities of a school board director. It's one page. I'm pretty sure I can master that very quickly. Okay. So I don't think sometimes experience in politics isn't good either. So I always hear from people, well, that person's more experienced. Yeah, but how's the experience been? You know, so let's take the experience thing out of the equation. I can go in there. I have experience in auditing, in process management. I think I can look at things objectively. And the number one thing I want to do is, as an example, I want to talk to people and say, what do you do? And if they can't really say 3 to 5 things that benefit the taxpayer, benefit the student, benefit the teacher, benefit the process, then either we need to reevaluate, why are we spending money? Because every head is a line item in the budget, okay? And the way that we control policy, and policy is people, right? And people are processes. That's how the thing flows, regardless of whether it's government, which I served in for 23 years, or the private sector. So, you know what, if we can repurpose somebody to make it more of value or value add, let's do that. Unfortunately, like the real world, I think we have a lot of obsolete positions that need to be looked at. And I think we could downsize the top, maybe get rid of some 250,000 net comp or total comp positions, and then flow that money back where it's needed. And maybe, you know, see improvements that are measurable and definable.
Nice. Okay. And I know you kind of already alluded to this, but I want to give you opportunity to, you know, address this. What are your top priorities for the school district?
I would say my number one priority is to give the teachers back that autonomy that we already talked about. We have to restore that parent-teacher relationship. I guess it's kind of three phases, right? So my top priority is the operation itself. Okay, is the operation running at peak efficiency, let's say, for lack of a better term? Are the people that are doing the majority of the work getting the best support? And I talked about that. The other thing is, I think the board has to have a priority to protect parental rights. And I put in my platform, parental rights, in my opinion, are God-given. If the state does not have the right to take away your parental rights, you know, the control you have over raising your child or children, unless you're a criminal and the courts remove that right from you, okay? So I don't want people going out there saying, oh, he thinks even bad parents that beat their kids should be able to do anything. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is most people are good. Most people that I meet are good. Most parents love their children. And it horrifies me that the state would pass a law where schools can intervene in that parent-child relationship and make decisions without the parent's knowledge. We have to push back on that at all costs. Now, what does all costs mean? And this kind of goes for the no boys and girls sports. It's the same theory. In my opinion, and also, you know, I'll drop a name here, Jim Walsh also talked about it at the last state meeting. OSPI does not have the authority under the state constitution to withhold any funding from schools. Okay. They do that. It's under threat and coercion because in this state, given the makeup of the judiciary, there's probably not a judge who would rule against, you know, the executive branch in this state. And so I talked about this a little bit in the spokesman article. I've also talked about it with some other school board directors in my capacity as, you know, chair of the party, is how do we federalize this issue? And one idea that I had, and I'll be meeting with some attorneys on this here over the next few weeks, probably. We have a lot of Title I kids in Central Valley. I think, you know, District 81 does, every school district does. You get federal money for those Title I kids, right? And you being a formal school board director and State Board of Education, you know what I'm talking about. Once you receive that federal money, you have an obligation with the federal government to follow through on the promise to that student, okay? If you don't, now to me, this becomes a federal civil rights issue, or at least maybe you have a chance to get it into federal court and end this madness once and for all, where OSPI can basically hold that sword of Damocles over your head. We're going to strip funding unless you do what we say, even though we can't. And where are all the McCleary people out there that all I ever hear is, oh, McCleary this and McCleary that? Why doesn't McCleary apply on the threat of withholding taxpayer money from schools? You know, so I think we need a champion for that cause. And that's one of my priorities. I'll be out in front like a hammer on that one. I think we have to have that argument. And I think we need to do it, you know, very soon.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. How would you handle a situation where parents, teachers, and administrators disagree on a major policy issue?
I think the best thing to do is to have a small group conversation, not a, let's say, a board setting where you only have one side talking at another side with no feedback. And, you know, that may be start out with an individual parent meeting with, you know, a teacher, somebody from the district, and somebody that's maybe, you know, not involved, but they're just there kind of like as a mediator to talk through it. I just think that there's very little resolution on some of these problems now. And it's because, you know, there's a lot of factors. One is like, well, we can't get three of us together at the same time. Then we violate the public meetings, all these excuses they make. I think we need to be more responsive. If there are serious, if it's a one-off issue, I think there's probably a process in place, but we need follow-up on that. So, you know, one thing that I want to do is I want to have like an anonymous write us, you know, and I have it on my website, you know, robforcentralvalley.com. Just like, you don't got to tell me who you are, just tell me your story, right? And we don't necessarily have to prosecute every one of those, but you know what? Some of them might be exaggerated, but some of them may not. It's always good to know what people are thinking. So I think the number one thing you just have to do is you have to communicate, get both sides together, particularly where kids are involved. Tensions are going to be high to start with, but you have to find common ground on these issues. It can't always just be the law says this. I'm following the law. It's a mandate. That doesn't work, you know. And sometimes you have to just stand up for what's right. And in fact, in the roles and responsibility, you have a moral obligation to do what's right. It even says that in the law. Whether that happened on your watch or something that happened before that you need to make right, or something, you know, that's coming down that you need to avert. Okay. So that's part of the job as well. It's, you know, it's called sound judgment. And sometimes I think that we don't have that. And maybe it's because people are afraid to make a call because they might be held responsible for it. Hey, you might not make the right call every time. Own it. If you don't, move on. I think as generally as Americans, as a people, we're forgiving, you know, people aren't going to hold it against you. But if you try to like weasel your way away from it, then they're never going to let you forget.
Yeah, for sure. Rob, what role do you believe a school board director should play in overseeing the superintendent?
Well, the superintendent reports to the board. Okay. I think there should be natural tension between the board members and the superintendent, not in a hostile way, but there should be a relationship that's established that I'm going to question you. It's not personal. It's my duty. Right now, I just feel like, oh, we're all one big happy family. And that rubber stamp just keeps hitting, you know, the documents, right? Let's approve, approve, approve. I'm not the only one with that perception. Okay. So I think we need to be polite. You need to be businesslike. You don't need to be nasty to each other. But people have to stop being so offended when you say, I don't necessarily agree with that. Can we talk about it? Or I might have a document or some evidence that proves otherwise. Let's talk about it. I'm being characterized as like, well, he just wants to destroy everything. No, I don't. I just want questions answered, you know. And, you know, I think it's important to make sure that we get feedback from the community on some of these issues, but sometimes you have to have that lower level conversation, and then you go out and then you have a broader conversation. I can't remember the last time a school board member had a town hall in Central Valley School District. I don't. You know, they say, hey, we're transparent. You know, we want to be accountable to the people. I will be. I'll have office hours. You can always contact me. It can be confidential, or if you want me to pitch your case, you know, I'll do both ways. Right. But I think, you know, I would pledge to have a quarterly town hall. Okay. And people can come ask me whatever they want. I'll stay there as long as they want to talk. Okay. I just don't think that being accessible to your constituents is part of that RCW and your roles and responsibilities. I think we've fallen short on that.
Yeah. Well, and this alludes to my next question, actually. You touched on this, but I'll just give you another opportunity to maybe complete it. How do you plan, if elected, do you plan to continue to connect with the community and make sure you're hearing from constituents?
Yeah, so there's the structured methods where you can write, you know, at the board email. You can send an email. That's a public record. Anybody can make an appointment to come talk to me face-to-face if they want to. Like I said, it could be confidential. Whatever form they want, whatever the problem is, I would rather have people come to me with ideas as well, not just, hey, something's wrong all the time. That could kind of wear you out. I get it, but it's good to hear good things. Like I said, I would have scheduled town halls. Open forums, people can come in there, they can ask things. And you know what, I've been shouted down before. It doesn't bother me. I know there's not going to always be friendlies in there. That's okay. I'm not going to stack the crowd. And honestly, depending on the urgency of the problem, I would be available 24/7. People have my phone number. I think that's public record too. It's, you know, everything I do, people know how to get a hold of me. And then I would just say, like, if you need something, and you know me personally on this, I'll show up to help you out, right? I just want to build that community relationship again. Again, it goes back to the parents and the teachers, and then, you know, the culture of the school should be, you know, more familial, right? This is why we went with faith, family, and freedom with the GOP. We wanted to get away from, like, hey, we're the party of the stock portfolio. No, we're not, right? We're faith, family, and freedom. That's what we're about. I think schools need to do that too. I'm not advocating for any specific religion. I'm just saying, hey, let's start believing in each other. Let's trust our neighbor. Let's, you know, ask each other for help. Let's, you know, help each other out when we have the chance. That's right. Community, right? That's what I want to achieve.
Exactly. Rob, final comments. Is there anything else that you want voters to know about you or what you're standing for?
Yeah, so all of my information is on Rob for Central Valley. That's the word for Rob, F-O-R, centralvalley.com. Go on there if you want to volunteer for the campaign, support the campaign in any way. We're starting to put more and more content up there. I held back on even campaigning or even raising money or anything at all because there was some criticism about the GOP vetting process. So I wanted to make sure that there was no, you know, cloud over that of me getting favorable treatment or anything. So I did nothing, right? I didn't raise a single dollar until that was over, just to protect the integrity of that. So I'm a little behind, but I'm catching up. Everything's going to be okay. You can get a hold of me through the website, or you can get a hold of me on Facebook. I have an X account, Rob for Central Valley. You know, if you want to talk, I have people getting a hold of me every day. Hey, can we chat? Sure, let's do it. So I'm accessible. Let's talk. I don't want to do this for me. I want to do it for you. Out there. And I appreciate the time. I appreciate the time that everybody's taken over these, you know, past couple of weeks to talk with me and clue me in on what's really going on out there. And I always appreciate you, MJ. So thank you.
Well, thanks, Rob. Thanks for joining us today and giving our voters a chance to get to know you better and what you're running for. And thanks again for stepping up to run for this important position.
Great again.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, Rob. Take care.
Bye, everybody.